Special guest riding shotgun with me this morning, the former chancellor at Ivy Tech, the former deputy mayor. There's probably six more titles I'm missing to go along with that. John Weikart is in the studio this morning. What is your current title?
Currently retired private citizen.
There you go. But you have, you're like Keith. Once you retire, you get 10 more jobs. So community service has never been too far from your reach, and you're continuing with that now. For one serious moment, what is your official title with the convention center stuff?
Well, the convention center, the county commissioners by ordinance created a convention center advisory commission. And I was late for the first meeting, so that's
well, you're
how I
retired.
Became chair.
That's okay.
Yeah, so I became chairperson of the commission because I showed up late for the first meeting.
They
so
all voted you in, right?
Yeah. You know, I'm back to your earlier question. My wife tells me I'm as busy as I was before, only I'm not getting paid anymore. So that's part of it, too.
Well, we're happy to have you in here, and it's always great to see you. You've, again, your perspective on things that have gone on in this town, whether it's been in the business, government, education community is a excellent resource, and we'd like to tap into those, and we're glad you're here. Now, I'm going to blame you for the forecast, since I've been taking it on the chin all morning. This is the John Weikart forecast for today. Isolated thunderstorms. We've already seen some weather move through. Just tells you how not pleasant it is outside, as the sidewalks and streets are almost dried off from it. On our way to 94 today. Heat advisory is in effect from noon until 7 p.m. on Saturday. So that's, I told you wrong or incorrectly last hour. I assume that was just today. It's not. It's all day Friday until Saturday at 7 p.m. So that not going to be very comfortable. So when it's a heat advisory, what exactly does this mean? Let's click on the magic link, and I'm going to guess a couple things. Humidity is up. Heat index is probably pushing triple digits. Wear loose-fitting clothing. Don't work too much in the sun, et cetera, et cetera. Why do these people type these in all capital letters? Do they think? I mean, try. Look at that. I love to look at that radio joke, but look at that. That's impossible to read. What are they trying to do here? Nobody wants to do this.
They're yelling at you. And actually, that sounds like what I do every day.
Oh
anyway.
My goodness! They are yelling at me. A heat advisory. Here we go. Heat index values up to 105 degrees at times. Please. Stay cool. Please, if you're working outside, take breaks in air conditioning so your body can cool down. Please stay hydrated. Help out with pets. Don't leave them outside if you're going to be gone all day. Put them somewhere else. And obviously, any of your neighbors who are older, who perhaps, don't look at me that way, your neighbors that are older or don't have air conditioning, please help them out, because when it gets this hot, not good. They don't put these warnings out for fun. They don't put these warnings out here for us to ignore. Please be aware of that. And that's going to be 94 today, 95 tomorrow, and the heat advisory from noon until 7 p.m. on Saturday. 90 on Sunday doesn't give us much relief. The good news is, and I do have some good news for you, all of next week as we wrap up the final week of July, seasonable temperatures in the mid-80s. Nothing in the 90s. That's the good news, because the Monroe County Fair is going to start next weekend. And then the week after that, we know, is the fair wrapping up. Plus, Ellettsville, RBB, everybody over there is back to school on the 3rd. And you don't want to be going back to school. Making sure that classroom air conditioning is probably not perfect. But that's the good news. We won't have to worry about that. Updated forecast, live radar, find it all at WGCLradio.com. The reason I have reached out to you, Mr. Chairperson, to come in and join us is, obviously in the news, the convention center stuff, for lack of a better term, has been brewing lately. There's a reason a commission was formed, a committee was formed, so you can see what the options are moving forward. What was the key to push this over the hill to get the committee started? Did somebody reach out and say, hey, we want to build something? Are we as a community looking to reach out and have those people come in? Tell us how the genesis behind all of this.
Well, this has been a topic that's obviously been discussed in our community and mulled over for probably as long as 15 years. There was an attempt several years ago to seek a funding source for expansion of the convention center. And that attempt was not successful. So it's not a new topic for the community. The commissioners, the county commissioners, decided in April to put out an RFQ, a request for qualifications, to find out if there was interest out there for someone to come in begin this process.
Now, for people who aren't familiar how the RFQ works, is it a public notice? Do you put that out to building company? Who gets that?
Yeah, it's a public advertisement.
Okay.
And believe me, professional firms and companies that do this kind of work have someone who's always on the lookout for these sorts
sure,
of things.
Sure, ear to the ground.
So there was a public notice we were seeking, the commissioners were seeking these respondents who wanted to explain their qualifications.
And the reason I bring this up is because it's not like the commissioners went to a firm they're already in business with and said, hey, we want to put a convention center together. Is that a governmental style of doing business because you want to put that RFQ out there to get the best bid? Or do you, I guess you don't have an architect on call, do you?
No, and clearly the commissioners didn't say we already know what we want in advance.
Gotcha.
And we're just going through the motions here. And you know, when you speak to how widely was it advertised, you know, I think the answer to that is that one of the respondents was from Bloomfield Hills, Michigan.
So, okay. Yeah.
So you know, you're getting, and frankly, there was another respondent that submitted a proposal, you know, 6 weeks late, from Grand Rapids, Michigan. So. You know, it was widely advertised and, you know, well known by those corporations and companies who do this kind of work. So the process was that the commissioners put out this RFQ looking for respondents in April with a May deadline for responding. At about the same time, they, by ordinance, created the advisory commission, who would review those proposals and make a recommendation back to the county commissioners. And if I may tell you who's on that advisory
commission. Please,
yes. So you've got individuals who represent certain constituencies, if you will. So Patrick Stofers, who is county commissioner, serves on the advisory commission. Eric Spoonmore,
county council.
Jim Murphy.
CFC.
CFC, but he also serves on the Convention Center Building Corporation. Mick Renizen, who's been appointed representing the city of Bloomington, and then I was asked to participate as the citizen member of the commission.
Well, they got a deal on that, didn't they?
Well, and
that's a heavy hitting group.
Well, and you know, my participation in my time with the college, my 24 years with Ivy Tech. I mean, I was involved in multiple construction projects, public construction projects, and renovation projects. So. I have had some experience in that, and I was most appreciative of being asked. So we're the five members of this advisory commission, and I want to keep emphasizing as often as I can, that's our role. We are not a decision-making
body. Sure, and that's why I wanted to have you on today, because I think people sometimes get lost in the process. They see one headline, don't read the story, and then gets to the end where it says, you're not in charge of making the decision, and the assumption comes up that the county is going to vote on it, or the city council is going to vote. Who is going to be the decision maker at the end of this? Besides, not you.
That's correct. And you know, and often there's a criticism that a non-elected group of people is making decisions to spend public money. And the fact is, we're not deciding anything.
That's the important fact, right?
We're simply reviewing things on behalf of the county commissioners and making recommendations back to them. So it's a complicated process. The property is the county's property. The expansion project is the county commissioner's ultimately decision.
So we got fingers, we got hands of everywhere.
We do, and the funding aspect of it is the county council. You know, the county council has to decide. You know, as we think about possible funding sources, you know, what are they willing to do? What do they have the political will to do? The city's certainly involved. Because they would play a piece of this if in fact the county council decides to move forward with one avenue of funding.
Is this a normal? Are we normal compared to other cities with this, with all these parties involved for that one site? Or in other towns, is it just the county that owns the convention center and the land? It seems like we've got everybody involved with that. Is that part of the challenge?
Well, I think you'd probably see as many models as you might imagine. So in our case, it's a county-owned facility that's in the city, but the fact of the matter is, I don't want to go there because it's way premature to go there. But if the food and beverage tax were in fact revisited as an issue, the city is certainly involved because the lion's share of a county food and beverage tax would go to the city. So is the city agreeable, or will it commit to shifting its revenue stream from that food and beverage tax back to support this particular project? So, you know, that's certainly why they're involved. The city's obviously involved because, you know, we're the property's in the city.
And right.
The plan commission will be involved. The plan commission will be reviewing.
So all of these fingers of government, because of how and where it's come together, that's why you have so many people involved with this.
Yes. And what we've done as a commission is our meetings are public meetings. They're publicly advertised, but we've decided that's certainly not enough. And we've developed a list of stakeholders, if you will, who we think are would have interest in what we're doing. And we're even reaching out prior to our meetings to say, you know, we want you to be aware we're meeting again.
Yeah, absolutely.
And here's what we're talking about at this particular meeting. And that includes the restaurant associations. It includes the hoteliers who are already downtown. It includes the Bloomington Economic Development Corporation and the Chamber of Commerce and the neighborhood associations.
It just goes to show you that there aren't a lot of groups who don't have a stake in this moving forward.
No, absolutely. The Ellisville Town Council, because it would be a countywide effort in terms of expanding the convention center, if that's the direction that the elected officials decide to go. So we want to make, and that stakeholders list is not an exclusive list. So, anytime anybody says, hey, I'd like to be advised of those meetings, can you put me on that list? By all means, call Angie Purdy at the county commissioner's office and give us that contact information, and by all means you're included.
So the commissioners are in charge of posting when the meeting is going to be and doing the legal notices for all that.
Yes, and it's okay. It's on CATS.
Yeah, great.
It's not live on CATS, but it's recorded, and you know, people
who watches live TV anymore.
Yeah, right.
DVR
yeah,
so, it. Yeah. Watch it on your internet a little bit later.
So you can if you can't make a meeting, you can see what happened at the meeting.
John Weikart's our guest this morning. He is the chair of the commission on the Monroe County, Bloomington Convention Center. You keep change that up on me. The new sign looks very nice and all of that. Now
The advisory commission.
I told you I would get it wrong all morning long. But remember, this group has no voting power in that. That's one thing we want to remind you of this morning. And you've touched on it here briefly, but the $1 million, well, maybe it is more than $1 million question is, how is this going to be funded? Who is going to pay for it? Who decides that direction when it's all said and done? We have the RFQs out there, and you pick the group from Bloomfield. I'm making this up. This is not happening. You pick the group from Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. You say, we love this design. We love how you're going to do it. What's the next step in that process?
Yeah, and actually the group we picked is from Indianapolis.
Oh, it is from Okay, so it is done. Okay, Indianapolis.
So, we have made a recommendation for Sun Development and Management Corporation.
Oh, that was in the paper the other day.
Yeah, to begin the process, and the county commissioners approved this at their meeting this week, that we can move forward with the process. The advisory commission is authorized to sit down with Sun and begin negotiations with them about what's this project really going to look like, what's it going to cost, and how is it going to be funded. I can tell you that Sun Corporation has a lot of history, particularly in the state of Indiana, with hotels and convention center projects. And, I can give you an example of, both entities gave us references to check, and it's just like employment references.
Sure.
You wouldn't give us somebody who wasn't going to say good things about you.
Right.
But the things that were said about Sun Corporation were exceptional. And there's a project right now in Plainfield, Hendricks County, where Sun is building a hotel and expanding the convention center there.
So they're going to have practice on doing this already.
Oh, yeah. They have a lengthy history. And the fact is that the expectation would be the hotel is privately funded. Sun Corporation would come up with the funds to build the hotel. That would be their responsibility. So what would fall upon the county is how do we want to fund the expansion of the convention center side of this activity? The Sun Corporation presentation struck me because I hadn't frankly thought about this before they made their presentation. We're talking about a 200-room hotel, and it's clear in the presentation and from what we know from a study that was done several years ago, a feasibility study, 200 rooms isn't going to be enough. So the fact
Well, that was going to be my next question. What is enough? Because hasn't this been a little bit of a chicken and an egg discussion? Well, we don't have a big enough convention center because we don't have enough hotel rooms. We don't have enough hotel rooms because we don't have a large enough convention center to lure and would compete
That's
with
correct.
Indianapolis. So give me the explanation on that moving
sure,
forward.
Sure, sure.
Where's the balance point?
Well, and keep in mind that Bloomington, by all evidence and all data, is the second number two rated destination community in the state of Indiana. And we are currently losing as many as 40 opportunities a year for conferences and conventions. And I want to emphasize, I think we ought to rename this as it's the Civic / Convention Center.
Okay.
Because
convention gets lost. That's a term you think, well, you've been to McCormick's Place in Chicago. You're not competing for that or
right.
Lucas Oil Stadium or the Indianapolis area. What do you mean by civic?
Well, right now, primarily, the greatest usage of our current convention center is for our own local civic activities. And that will not be lost in this process. But right now, you know, we're able to handle groups of, you know, something less than 400 people who might want to come in for a convention. And we're missing opportunities for larger groups, 500, 700. Part of that is because we don't have the space in the convention center. The other part of it is because there aren't hotels available to host those sorts of events. The Courtyard by Marriott has been a wonderful partner for
Absolutely.
The convention center. But the fact is, you know, they operate at capacity most of the time. And so when you say to them, well, we need, you know, 120 of your rooms dedicated for a convention, they're able
yeah,
to say,
yeah, they have six.
Yeah, we don't have 120 rooms available to
yeah.
dedicate to a convention. And the new hotel, and I can tell you, Sun, for instance, and we're not talking about, and I don't say this disparagingly, we're not talking about a Motel 6 downtown. We're talking about
200 rooms.
Yeah, you know, there's the Plainfield.
Eight stories.
Plainfield project is an Embassy Suites. So, you know, you're talking about a full service hotel, but the offshoot of attracting, you know, larger conventions that could bring in, you know, 17,000 more conventioners every year is the overflow from the main hotel is going to advantage our other hotels downtown. My experience has been attending conventions and conferences in my professional life. As you know, sometimes there's an early bird special. You register
sure, yeah.
early, you get in the main hotel, you register late, you get in the overflow hotel, and you got to walk across the street. Or there's a two-block walk,
yeah.
so you're not walking down a hall to the convention
yeah,
center.
And 2 blocks in Bloomington's a little bit different than 2 blocks in New York City, right?
That's correct. And, you know, we think from the feasibility study and the presentations that jobs created through this project aren't just the construction jobs in the building. And I will tell you that Sun Corporation already has as its partners local companies like Weddle Brothers and Bynum Fanyo, and came to us with those partnerships already in place. But you're talking about a full-service hotel that's probably going to create as many as 80 new full-time jobs itself. And it's predicted that it could create about 260 new jobs in our downtown community for restaurants and caterers and anyone who's providing service back to the hotel and convention center.
Well, you'd think the convention center people would have to expand as well to handle more volume and recruiting more business and outside sales and
yeah,
all that goes with it.
Yeah, and it's not really the key is more staff at the convention center. But, you know, you think about any, you know, visualize any restaurant downtown and suddenly you've got a convention going on with 700 people.
Yeah.
And they're going to
turns a summer day into a little bit of a busier
yeah.
busier angle
yeah.
on that. And as we move forward with John Weikart here, the Convention Center Commission Advisory Commission. Did I get it right that time? Am I close?
Yeah, you're
closer.
It's out of order, but that's good.
Well, so am I most of the time as well. Let's talk about how this is going to get paid for here when we come back from the break, because again, we've mentioned food and beverage, we've mentioned innkeepers, we've mentioned other things like that. Let us know how the because that's what people want to know. They want to know how
sure.
it's going to affect my pocket. You've given us the benefit. Of if this gets done, what could happen here and increase that. Let's talk about how we'll pay for it. The chairman of the Monroe County Convention Center Advisory Commission.
Hey, that's good.
That doesn't fit on the business card either. You need something a little shorter.
That's right. I need business cards.
You do.
Of course,
so
I don't have a phone or an office. I don't know what they'd
well,
on there.
I think Carrier Pigeon could find you at some point.
That'd be it.
Drop it off at your meetings that you make public through the county commissioner, so you can keep an eye on that. We've been talking this morning about the convention center and the possible expansion, the million, $100,000, whatever the amount's going to be. The question of moving forward is, when this model gets here and gets shovels in the ground, who and how is it going to be paid for? What is the prognosis for that?
Yeah, and again, I'm going to suggest what some options are, because I don't
want
I don't want anybody to think these are conclusions that have been reached, because they certainly have not. You know, I mentioned again the food and beverage tax was there was an unsuccessful attempt years ago. So the county council, if that becomes an option for them to consider, have to decide whether or not they're willing to do that.
That's another branch of government that you need to contact your governmental leaders to make your voice heard on whether you think that's food and beverage tax. For people that don't completely clearly understand it, means what?
Well, that you're going to pay what would be proposed and has been proposed is you would pay a 1% tax on food and beverage that you purchase in the county. So to keep that in perspective, and I've tried to do easy math because I was an English major and can't do complicated
math. Help me
math.
Out. I'm not very, I have my sandals on, but that doesn't mean I can count.
You know, it's a dime on $10, or it's 50 cents on $50. So
a buck on 100.
I'm following you. So if you're a frequenter of some of the downtown restaurants and you've gone in with a spouse or loved one and you spent $50 on dinner, you're going to pay 50 more cents on this tax. You know, my experience, I only speak for myself, is you're already paying it when you go to Indianapolis and the surrounding counties around Indianapolis, and I'm not sure that I pay much attention necessarily that if I'm having dinner in Indianapolis, then I'm paying an additional 1%.
Well, you're not required to have dinner in Indianapolis either.
No, and that's another point. This is not a, you know, some of the opponents would argue, well, this is unfair. I'm not required to go downtown and have dinner in one of our restaurants downtown.
But people that come into town for a convention aren't going to buy groceries and cook in their hotel room.
That is correct. So again, you know, what you're talking about is students who are here. IU students who are here who are eating and drinking things in our local downtown are going to pay this tax and then go back to New York or Illinois or wherever they came from. You know, and when they leave here, the visitors to the conventions center, the civic center, from out of town are going to be paying this tax. Local residents, you know, are going to pay if this happens, allegedly.
This is how it would work out.
You know, local residents would obviously pay it too. But
sure.
Again,
just like they would in parking meters, just like they would. And the argument is, well, you just keep nickel and diming us. What is the benefit of having the convention center? Because right now, there's an empty lot. There's a parking lot going on there. What is the benefit of not having anything down there?
Well, I can tell you that studies have indicated that we are losing about $3 million a year in business to the current convention center because of lost opportunity, and that it's predicted that with the expansion of the Ebbe Civic and Convention Center, we can generate upwards of $13 million in revenue to our community every year.
And that includes property taxes? That includes
No. That's
no?
Just,
okay.
That's just revenue.
Just revenue.
You know, you're talking about it's predicted that there'd be about $5 million more dollars a year in hotel revenue generated, almost $4 million more in restaurant revenue, and about another $4 million in just service revenue as people come to the community and need services in the community. So it's going to generate additional revenue into our community. A hotel, a private hotel in the downtown, is going to pay taxes. And that, you know, that generates tax revenue in that case back to the city. And one of the funding sources, you know, that would have to certainly be negotiated with the city is that property, that land lies within the TIF.
Right.
You know, is the city willing to consider using TIF funds to help support the project? I don't know what the mayor's answer may be to that, but the fact of the matter is that hotel will generate money back into the TIF.
Sure.
So, you know, there are, again, much to be discussed, much to be negotiated.
Yeah, these are options on the table.
I will give you the example again back in Plainfield in Hendricks County. The project that Sun Corporation is involved in up there, Sun Corporation put up $26 million of its own money to build the Embassy Suites Hotel. The Hendricks County and Plainfield are putting up $6 million to expand the convention center, and that money is the last money in. So Sun Corporation is paying upfront to build the hotel, and then the gap funding to complete the project on the expansion of $6 million, Hendricks County, Plainfield is paying through a combination of...
So I was going to ask you, how are they doing
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right. They've, you know, a bond issue. They're sure. using, you know, they already benefit from the food and beverage tax up there because they're one of the donut counties around Marion County. Mm-hmm. It's predicted that the food and beverage tax, if the county council were to decide to go that direction, could generate about $3 million a year in additional revenue. That could pay off a revenue bond that could fund the expansion of the convention center. The innkeeper's tax will not...
Right, I was going to ask you about that as well.
And there's another point, too, because it gets complicated. We already have authority in our community to pass a food and beverage tax. To increase the innkeeper's tax, the state legislature has to approve our ability to increase our food or our innkeeper's tax. You know, recent events show the state legislature hasn't certainly been amenable to always letting Bloomington do anything that it wants to do. But even if they were to do that, because the innkeeper's tax is already dedicated for certain activity, even that increase would not be enough.
We don't have enough innkeepers, right?
Well, it just would not be enough to support a revenue issue or a bond issue to expand the convention center.
I've been asked via social media if it's a good idea, why aren't they asking for redevelopment funds on that? How does that work out?
Well, I'm going to assume that by redevelopment, we're talking about the Redevelopment Commission.
Let's do that because I don't have that full detail there. So
yeah, so that again is
sorry.
is the TIF funding, is the okay. Tax Increment Finance funding. So certainly on the table it would be the city's TIF. So certainly on the table as part of this negotiation with the city of Bloomington is, you know, if the food and beverage tax is the source and if it generated $3 million a year, the city's going to get $2.5 million of that revenue because it's population distributed.
Yes.
So part of the negotiation is, are you going to pony up that $2.5 million back towards this expansion project until that revenue bond, you know, is paid off? Secondly, will you consider tax increment finance support for this project as well, since it's going to generate revenue back into your TIF and back into your redevelopment commission? So all of that is on the table. All of that is you know.
And remind us again who makes those decisions, because it's not the advisory commission.
No.
I'm harping on that because I don't want people to tune into this 3, 5, 6, 12 minutes in and say, well, there's Weikart telling me how it's going to go and how this is going to happen. The good news is I'm recording this, so anybody can go back and hear the full context. But that's why we keep interjecting that these are not decisions that have been made. These are options on the table.
Yeah, and you know, and for anybody to suggest, well, a bunch of elitist developers are sitting around making these decisions, I'm a retired guy sitting at home reading the newspaper. You know, I mean, I have no skin in this game financially. I have nothing to gain from this other than I appreciate being asked to be involved in a community activity again. But you know, again, it's sitting down with those funding sources, be it the county through whatever issue, if that's food and beverage tax, for them to consider the city. And TIF revenue, having an arrangement through a local agreement, intergovernmental agreement, that they will shift those tax benefits from a food and beverage tax back to the project. The developer, what are you putting up for this, and how much of this? Because we're not asking taxpayers to build an Embassy Suites hotel that we then turn over and say to, you know, someone, here, you operate this and make the money from it. At taxpayer expense.
Doesn't work.
That's not where we're headed. And again, we are still, it's interesting to me because we're further along than we've been in 15 years, and yet we're just at the beginning of what we need to do. The other steps remaining in this process is to sit down, excuse me, and to negotiate with Sun Corporation, again, what's this project going to look like? With our input, we know what kind of a community we are and what we want in design. This is what we want it to look like. We want to make sure that we can co-locate the convention center staff and the tourist bureau staff from North Walnut and pull them back down so we can, they can be co-located, if you will, and then the county has an opportunity to do something with that property.
And then you're going to talk about parking garages,
or parking garages, or you know whatever that case may be.
So that's what gets everybody involved. That gets the plan commission involved. That gets all these other facets of it.
Correct.
In a perfect world, in a perfect timeline, I want you just to look into your crystal ball and give me a guess. 5 years, 3 years, 10 years, what do you think the cut the ribbon, let's open the doors and have some fun with this, if it goes and voted on by who needs to vote on it, what would you think the timeline would be?
Well, excuse me, from personal experience in projects I've been involved in that have to be publicly bid, the works publicly bid and all those sorts of things, you know, you're 18 months to 2 years from saying, let's start till we cut a ribbon. And, you know, and we're not to that point yet.
Right.
So, you know, if let's say by the end of this calendar year or sometime before 2017 is out, we've put the funding package together, we've completed the negotiations, we're ready to begin. So we move into 2018 and we actually begin to break ground and move the project forward. You know, you're still 18 months out, at least, and that's just my guess.
Everything goes perfectly.
Yeah, so, and interestingly, of course, another project that the date keeps getting moved out, maybe I-69 will be completed, this leg of it, by the time we cut a ribbon and open the doors on a convention center. And therefore, that takes care of the concern people may have about, but gosh, how are people going to get here?
Right.
So, you know, these things, you know, are not happening consecutively. They're happening concurrently. So, yeah, you know, we're probably, but my guess.
Right. That's all I asked was your magic eight ball.
If the county commissioners say we're ready to sign, if the county council says we're in, if the city says we're in, and we sign the papers and break the ground and do the shovel thing, you know, with the silver shovels, you know, you're still 18 months to a couple of years before you actually walk in the door.
And it's interesting to see who has to sign off on all of that. You just mentioned all three legislative bodies that have to.
You know, in the photo op at the, you know, groundbreaking is going to be, you'll need a panoramic.
You'll
need a panoramic camera to get all the stakeholders who have money and skin in the game in the picture.
If people want more information on following along in this process, is the best place to go is the Monroe County website to follow the commissioners? Is that where you can get your links and all that good stuff?
Yes, because this is all currently being handled and reported back to the, because it's the county commissioners who have charged us with this activity, and that's to whom we report.
Excellent. Can we see you again in the future, I hope?
Yeah, I hope to be seen in the future.
Well, yeah, in our one city center penthouse overlooking a lovely downtown. I know you have a meeting to get to. Thank you so much for your time this morning, and we should probably do this, what, monthly?
Yeah, whatever you want.
I just don't know how quickly things evolve. Just stay in touch with me.
And the tentative schedule would have basically, again, tentative schedule that was part of the RFQ would suggest that the negotiations, once a developer was selected, would probably take 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay.
So, you know, we've been authorized to move forward. We haven't made contact back to begin that process, but we're a couple months out from that step, and then that's another recommendation back to the county commissioners.
Doors always open, my friend.
Thank you.
Thank you, John Weikart. Wait. Oh, you can't leave. I know you got to leave. You got to meet.
Oh, no, that's
you
okay.
Can go. I want to make, just again, the chairman of the Monroe County Convention Center Advisory Commission joining us this morning.
Yeah.
Thanks for your time, buddy.
Yeah, thank
Appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. Thanks. John Weikart.